You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
She's a maniac, maniac on the floor.
Whoa! That's not the same movie at all. That's about dancing. That has Irene Cara in it. We're not talking about that movie.
Oh. And she's dancing
that's not this movie.
That's not even close.
You think I'm playing some half-assed motherfucking game?
Now that's a movie that has Irene Cara in it, which we've already talked about in a previous episode.
Oh, music.
Thou art to be hanged and then burnt over a basket of living cats.
Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Leave the $1 million on the spot that I told you. Or wait, I'm not good at this. You know what I need? I need a tape recorder that's playing ocean sounds behind me.
Then you get in the spirit.
Oh, that's right. Next time we talk about this movie.
this is the only time. And Erica.
Hey, are you cold? Let's do it. Air quotes and audio wink talking about sex. Nothing turns me on more than being cold.
Yeah.
When there's a nice warm dong ready to warm me up.
The lady will have a tequila sunrise.
Hey, welcome to March Madness 2. Let's get nuts. We're not doing sports this time around. Last time we talked about the sports movies. Now we're talking about the nuttiest movies that New World's ever released. And nothing's nuttier than this one, 1977's Maniac. That's it. Believe me, there are images, but that's the theme song to 1977's Maniac, a.k.a. Assault on Paradise, a.k.a. The Town That Cried Terror, a.k.a. The Ransom, brought to you by Victor's Cliffside Zipline Tours. Need to get away from the rigors of life? Then take a ride on Victor's Cliffside Zipline Tours. Forget your worries as you ride the wind. You'll enjoy the experience so much. You might even move into the tiny cave Victor lives in. Buy a family pack and you too can wear Victor's poncho and dance in the sunset. Visit today.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie is directed by Richard Compton, who had also directed 1970's Angels Die Hard, the very first movie released by New World Pictures.
Heard of it? I've heard of it.
But before this particular movie comes out, Compton had experienced his biggest theatrical success with 1974's Macon County Line and the similarly titled but not a sequel, 1975's Return to Macon County. Which, again, not a sequel, but sure sounds like it.
Yeah, it's because there's no line in it. If there was a line, then it'd be a sequel. I mean, everyone knows, right?
Right.
That's there's right. Macon County Line,
yeah.
Which is ironically not in Macon County.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Macon County.
That's what the movie's about. You've seen it. It's all about cartography. That's all. It's just...
Yes.
We've got to get this map right. We've really got to get the county. We've got to get this
If you're into cartography and yeah. or geography, those movies are right up your alley.
Yeah. It
sounds thrilling.
It's so good.
Boy.
Such good stuff.
I've never been colder, if you know what I mean.
The original script for this was written by John C. Broderick, who was the writer and director of The Warrior and the Sorceress.
Heard of
really?
It.
And was then rewritten, but was originally about a Native American who attacks a Connecticut town. But the executive producer, Patrick Farrell, decided against it. He had it changed to what we will get into in this version. But Compton, the director, explained what the movie was about to the Arizona Republic in 1976. He said, "It's an action-adventure film, yet it's also about crime and the future, a form of crime in which terrorism takes place, not for political purposes, but for personal gain."
Hmm.
Okay.
I'm not sure we ever really understand the motivations behind this, but we'll get there.
Well, zip lining equipment is expensive, so it doesn't pay for itself.
It's true.
Everybody knows that.
Following this movie, director...
Everyone in the zip lining community knows that. I don't want to sound hoity, but there's a zip lining community, okay? You guys probably haven't heard of it, because it's pretty elite, but...
I'd imagine.
It exists.
Yeah, I'm sure. Sounds
we
elite.
Are called the Zippers, and a lot of people get us confused for a porn community, but it's about ziplining. Always has been, always will be. We're
don't
purists.
Get it confused. We love sex, but it's not about porn.
Do we zipline naked once in a while? Sure. But that's our own expression.
That's
if you can fucking afford it.
Following this, director Richard Compton had a long career in TV, including 8 episodes of Miami Vice.
Oh,
and many other series of the 80s and 90s. Including, he also directed a pilot called Barrington in 1987, which is produced by New World Television.
That
sounds riveting.
Did
sounds
not
great.
Go
Are
to
we
series.
Watch that?
I mean, at some point.
Is that with the bear? That
Barrington,
goes to England?
Yes. Yep.
No, that's Paddington.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But in the 80s, he was called Barrington.
They tried to make him more hip sounding,
changed
so they named
his
him
name.
Barrington.
He wasn't into Marmalade, but he was into the cartoon Marmaduke. It was different in the 80s.
Everyone was in the 80s.
They changed a lot of it for the movie.
Everyone. That's great.
There's a lot of New World folks, though, that worked on this movie, including editor Tina Hirsch, who had edited Death Race 2000, Big Bad Mama, Eat My Dust. She also edited this and edited several movies for Richard Compton before she starts editing movies for Joe Dante once he leaves New World. But this stars an incredible cast, including and starting with Oliver Reed, fresh from Dan Curtis's Burnt Offerings. In a few years, he would return to New World with The Brood.
The Brood. Yeah.
Yeah, which we have yet to get to. Deborah Raffin, she is from God Told Me To. She co-stars in this, having become a big name at the time from 1976's Nightmare in Bottom County. She and her husband, producer Michael Viner, they would go on in the 1980s and they would start a books on tape business.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm sure that did well.
Yeah, how did that pan out?
Yeah. For a little while. I hope they invested their money well.
Yeah, because they did not transfer to CDs. They were like, tapes only. That's, sorry.
Tapes only.
That's the only thing we do. We don't do vinyl. We don't do CDs. Mm-hmm. Tapes.
Yeah.
We also have Jim Mitchum, son of Robert, brother of Chris, in his brief New World stint that includes this and then following this movie, 1978's Blackout, also released by New World Pictures. Of course, his brother Chris appeared in Angel of Death, which was released by New World Video and is a favorite of this podcast.
easily top 10, sometimes top 5 for me.
It sometimes slips in and out.
Christ, there's
of
a
the
top 10
five.
Now? Jesus, we're letting anything slide through these days, aren't we? God almighty.
This is what 6 years of doing this podcast does to you. You start really opening up the aperture.
That's right. Soon it'll be whatever a top 20, then yeah. It'll be a top 50. I can't. I don't like that many things. So,
yeah, wow. It's good luck.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Erica's out. But now it's time to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Maniac, aka Assault on Paradise, about?
In a world where everyone has a gun, people have lost sight on the delightful simplicity and, quite frankly, badassery of a crossbow. I mean, first of all, they're ancient.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're quiet. I mean, the earliest crossbows date back to 7th century BCE China. Okay, these have been around a long time. Modern crossbows can shoot 400 feet per second.
They're environmentally
it might be. And what this movie's about. Both combo. This is I'm doubling up, okay? They're environmentally friendly. They don't eject any brass casings. They don't use lead. They don't produce any gunpowder residue. You can even jump from like a high cliff or say the top of reservoir into a reservoir or a lake. Now, when you get out of there, you can still use a crossbow. Try to do that with your gun. Yeah. Mm. Okay. Not cool. But with a crossbow, you can. And, you know, most importantly, they make you look really fucking cool.
They do. Mm. You can't beat the look of a crossbow. Erica, what is this movie about?
Hey, guys. I didn't get any of that when I watched it. To me, sorry, I must have just... The crossbow, definitely cool. I see that now. Thank you, Mark, for that explanation.
I'm here to help.
But to me, this movie was just about what one man can accomplish when he has a lot of time on his hands. You know? He has time to orchestrate multiple murders.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, okay. I wasn't sure which one you meant. Because I feel like we had several men in here that have frankly had a lot of time on their hands.
Frankly, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm talking about the murderer. Oh, okay. I should have started with that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
No, when murderous men have time on their hands.
Fair.
I mean, I actually thought specifically you were talking about Wolf, but because that guy had nothing but time on his hands.
I thought Tracker, quite frankly.
Tracker's that guy, got a lot nothing of time. But time on his hands, for sure.
Yeah. No, I in this case, I was talking about the murderer, about the maniac, if you will. Time to set up murders, to travel around, to work on costumes, to apply face paint, to set up traps, to set up zip lines, to procure a dirt bike, to have costumes.
To put gas in said dirt bike? All the time in the world.
All the time.
Lots of
all
time.
All the time.
Still cares about the police boys club?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. I couldn't disagree with any of those, though. For me, this movie was about that only the toughest guys in the world wear embroidered jackets.
Oof. Thank you for talking about that jacket. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, that is a thing that I loved.
That is something, that jacket. Unbelievable.
Did I do a quick eBay search to see if I could find a jacket similar? Yes. I didn't. At least not in my size.
That's not a quick search. That's a life goal. Like you can find it, but it's going to take time. It's going to take effort.
But I also feel like you have that made. It's a choice.
You have to get the jacket and then you embroider it like he did.
You don't find that jacket. That jacket finds you.
There it is.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. It's true.
That jacket's a journey.
Before we get to the Letterboxd synopsis, I do want to just say where you can watch the movie. You can see it on Shout TV. You can see it on YouTube. It's out of print, but you can get the Blu-ray that has both the art for Assault on Paradise and also Maniac, a Killer.
Oh, yeah.
And also in it, the Blu-ray also has the longer expanded TV cut.
Mm.
There was a TV cut of this movie?
Imagine having all that at your fingertips. You're a lucky man, Ryan. Boy, oh boy, do I wish I could reach over and grab that. Oh, wait. I can.
You can. It is in the house. It is in the house.
Look at me.
But let's get to the Letterboxd synopsis. We are on Letterboxd, so give us a follow there if you dare.
Dare you.
A Native American.
Oh, boy.
Nope. Try again.
Nope.
He's a white dude dressed up as a Native American, but definitely not an actual Native American. In fact, almost nobody who proclaims to be Native American in this movie is actually Native American. And that goes for Tracker, too. So,
but one could argue that there are indigenous Germans, right?
Like, I mean... did he somehow make it to America before any other explorer from Germany and then just get raised
in Canada? Yes. Maybe.
Maybe. Yes. Yeah, you were talking strictly the Paul Coslow backstory, but
right.
A Native American travels around a resort town. He doesn't travel around. He's very specific about what he's doing.
Yeah.
I guess it's a resort town. It's really just a town filled with a lot of rich people. That's just something that they seem to be very proud of. But I don't know if it's a resort town. Anyway, murdering cops and rich people with a high-powered crossbow. That's not true.
In no particular order.
But wait, hold on. A high-powered crossbow? Like, it's just a crossbow is a crossbow, right? I mean,
400 feet per second, that's high-powered in my book. Okay?
Wow.
That's high-powered.
You crunched. You couldn't help yourself. You crunched.
You did some crunching.
You did a crossbow crunch. It sounds like a terrible workout, but that's what you did.
I am sore, but I'm also more learned.
Yeah.
So,
You learned a lot about yourself and also crossbows.
Mm-hmm. Bit of a connoisseur. Crossbow connoisseur.
While demanding that the town's richest residents pay him money to stop the killings, which that part is true, though he's actually asking one of the town's richest residents. Well, he is a specific resident that he's asking for.
Well, he only has the phone number of one.
You only need one.
He can only truly call one of them.
Exactly.
He would make tapes for all of them if he knew how to call them.
He knew how to call them.
Yeah. This is what happens when you go unlisted. This is why you pay the big bucks.
The white pages were not split into rich and unrich at that time.
Nope.
You know.
Now, the opening scene of this movie is something I feel like we need to talk about because it is not only an incredible opening sequence to a New World movie, but also I believe it was filmed as a promotional clip to help sell the movie or maybe to add some extra footage to the very beginning. But it was actually filmed by Miller Drake, who worked actually at New World and was, I think he was head of post-production, and he eventually expands the sequence. They were going to just do a quick shot, I think, for the trailer, and they expanded it in the sequence. The sequence that only put out in the Roger Corman version. Once Roger puts it out, he puts this scene in. It was not filmed with the rest of the movie. And it's the one with the clown mask that is in all the promotional materials. The clown mask never returns. A guy dressed in a clown mask kills two people in a car. That's how the movie opens. The clown guy never returns. You're guessing later that it might be Paul Coslow, even though it doesn't seem like his MO in any way.
No, he's not dressed in Native American clothing. He's wearing a clown mask, which never returns. And also, I don't mean to kink shame, but this couple is in, say, their upper 20s, low 30s.
Sure.
At that age, you should not need to make out in a car.
They had never made out. They were fulfilling a life. I mean, look at the way they were kissing each other. It was like, oh, they've never done this. This is new.
And also,
this is brand new territory. They were like, look at this. We get to knock this off our list and also get paid for this to shoot this.
This is new.
He was grasping at her upper torso, her breastuses. Like he had never touched a breast in his life.
Like he had never, like they were brand new things.
I may never recover from
that. He was like, he was kissing her and he was like, oh, I should grab this too, right? Like that's right. What people do.
Right. Is that your elbow? I don't know. Oh, it's not. Oh.
Is this how it works? We're dead.
But also, at their age, you would think, you don't live at home. You could do this at home. You don't have to do this.
With mom and dad? Weird.
I'm saying you should have your own place by now. You shouldn't have to be like, the only place we can make out is in the car.
I've never made out before. I'm not going to start with mom and dad. It's gross.
Okay, well, yes. Well, the scene is very out of place with the rest of the movie. For sure.
But it's awesome. And it's probably the best.
I loved
it. It's probably the best cold open ever that New World ever did. But also, they never really did that. So it's kind of, you know.
I loved it. But it was my favorite opening I've probably ever watched in a New World movie. It just started. I was like, oh, I was so unprepared. I was like, oh, shit. It's my fucking popcorn. I didn't have popcorn, but. You know, imagine.
Right.
Had I popped delicious fresh popcorn.
Imagine, if you will, I someone would have been could tossing actually it make popcorn. Everywhere.
But you did have a lap of confetti at the time, which was strange.
I did, like, and I was just throwing it everywhere.
Yeah.
That's always, like, that's in the bed.
Yeah.
That's just in our bed.
I like to have confetti within reach. You never know. You never know when celebrations go straight.
Confetti parties. I know that house. After Angel 2, you were like, I'm all confetti all the time. So yeah. I have to all have the time. All the time.
All the time. That's how we started the year.
Mix a little glitter in.
I don't mean to get granular as we go through this movie, but then the best cold open ever is followed by maybe the best credit sequence ever. It's again, just Paul Coslow dressed in his poncho, just slow motion dancing in front of the sunset.
It's something.
It's pretty amazing, and it really is kind of a jarring because you have that open and then you see him dancing and Eric was like, whoa, what is this?
I thought maybe I had like clicked around and selected another movie. It's very yeah. But I was like, oh no, it does, have I done something
you're
wrong?
You're like, uh-oh. What happened? This doesn't feel like
bit about me. I thought I was wrong. Nope, it's New World.
Yeah.
I was like, did I make a mistake? No. This is it. This is correct.
This is how we're doing it.
But Corman made sure that this movie, even though this wasn't made by New World, which we'll explain later on, but he makes sure that the top of this movie is packed with a whole lot of stuff, much like he would in a New World movie. Because we open with Jim Mitchum. He's being delivered to the police station for reasons we don't know. And he's put in a jail cell for reasons we don't know. And then we see a couple police officers shot with arrows.
Right.
And we see the face of the killer, finally. It's, as we've mentioned,
not wearing the clown mask. That's forgotten.
Not wearing a clown mask, but definitely dressed as a Native American with war paint on his face. Paul Coslow has played a good deal of bad guys in his day, including in New World's The Annihilators.
That's where I recognized him from. I was like, I've seen this guy before.
Yes. Where he is really chewing the scenery in The Annihilators. He's really wonderful. He is also in New World's Hambone and Hilly, but we have not watched it yet, so I cannot say whether or not he plays a villain. I don't know.
The words Hambone and Hilly one more time.
I just keep not bringing that up. For us to watch, because I'm just pushing Hambone and Hilly down the road. Once we get to it, we'll have mentioned it at least 100 times.
At least. It's going to be a New World drinking game.
It'll be our last movie that we watch at the very end. God.
100% the last movie we watch is going to be Soul Man. 100%.
We may never get to that.
We will.
But James Mitchum was always so known for looking so much like his dad.
And sounding like his
dad. But in this movie, he looked just like Wings era Paul McCartney. Man, they tried hard to make him not look like his dad. He looks like...
If he had actually worn Paul Coslow's poncho forget it. That's Paul McCartney,
like,
guys.
Oh, that's Paul McCartney.
You can't convince me otherwise. Wait, but he sounds like Robert Mitchum. Yes, like, I don't care. That's Paul McCartney for you guys.
Paul McCartney, as great singer, songwriter, and, you know, he's really good at doing impressions. People don't know that about him, but he's really
good. Big fan of the Mitchums.
Are they the Mitchums of the deodorant dynasty?
I would love to think so. That much like, you know...
I love their deodorant. It burns when I put it on, but damn it, does it work. Look, it burns the skin, but it really keeps the stench at bay.
Wow. Okay.
It's like Paul Newman's. Like Paul Newman's...
Yeah, like salad dressing.
He had a salad,
like
salad dressing, mm-hmm. and the Mitchums had the deodorant.
Delicious salad dressing, but does nothing for my underarms, if you know what I mean. I've tried it. It doesn't work.
Does nothing.
Caesar dressing.
Thank you for the great...
Can't combat these pits.
Thank you for the great pasta sauce, but unfortunately...
But in both cases, the profits go to charity, which is really nice.
That's right. Oh. Except for the Mitchums. That goes straight to their pockets. Never said that that was a charitable thing.
To their arm pockets. I wonder if we could do a Pitt Dick Mitchum collab.
The smell of Pitt Dick. And a Mitchum cologne. Yeah.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, oof. What
is that the
dick
quote?
Smell.
Is that the quote?
Oof. Less dick,
boy.
More Pitt.
Oh. Wow.
Less dick, more Pitt.
Or more dick, less Pitt. I don't know. It's
okay,
really depends.
We could workshop it.
On which one. Yeah, yeah, it really depends.
We're going to take it to the board and see what they think. Mm-hmm.
Then we get into the police chief. So with the police chief, who's played by veteran actor John Ireland, who appeared in several westerns, such as My Darling Clementine and Red River, he discovers a note written on a chalkboard in the police station saying the rich must pay or the rich will die. And that's setting up our whole plot. The chief, though, then does what any police chief would do in this situation, which is that he runs to the phone and calls the richest man in town to let him know what happened.
Well, one of the richest men. I mean, we don't know if he is the richest.
True.
It's the one that he had a phone number for. So
right, that's right. The other guys, only he knows their numbers.
The
he calls
only
them
rich
up.
Guy that listed his phone number, so that everyone knows his number.
That man is William Whitaker, who is played by Stuart Whitman, who also appears in next week's Crazy Mama.
Oh.
So we will talk about him next week.
I see what you did there.
His character is rich because how?
Okay, so he's into real estate investment. We know that.
Yeah, so he owns some very valuable real estate.
So we can assume that that's how he got there, although one would argue you need to have made money elsewhere and then move into real estate.
To buy the land, but sure. Unless he inherited it, I don't know. Who knows?
Potentially. Is that the end of your question?
Is that the end of your explanation?
Is that it?
Somehow he made enough money to get into real estate investment. So
your answer to how did he get rich was, well, he must have had money to buy that land he owns. Anyway, you done?
It doesn't matter. He's rich. He owns a bunch of land. He owns a helicopter that he can fly.
Yeah. He really isn't just some rich guy with a helicopter. He flies that thing.
I know we're not in final questions, but...
We're not. We're definitely not.
You're rich enough to buy all this massive property. You're rich enough to own a helicopter. You have a massive house. You have a beautiful car. You have all the things. Could you have just forked out...
You're talking about me?
No, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking...
Or Erica.
Are we still talking about the movie? Are we still talking about this movie?
Oh, okay. Oh.
Are we done? Did we wrap up?
Are we still talking about Night Zoo?
The scene in Night Zoo when they get in their own private helicopter and fly around Toronto is amazing.
From the helicopter? Oh, that
would be so great. So
imagine
great.
If he had a crossbow to point at that elephant. Would it have even done anything?
Oh, my God.
It would have, absolutely, because it could go through chainmail and, like, full metal armor.
But what more about importantly, elephant skin?
Carbon footprint goes down.
Carbon footprint goes down. Except for the helicopter. That's burning a couple CO2s
Well, you have to kind of use the crossbow to counteract the use of the helicopter.
Right. It's your carbon offset is that you're using a crossbow. But my point is, my question is, given everything that happens in this movie, couldn't he have invested a couple hundred bucks in learning how to shoot a gun? Like,
no one did that in this movie, just except for the guy in the clown mask. He's the only one who successfully pulls off some shots.
I'm just saying, he shoots a lot in this movie and hits absolutely nothing. It's pretty astounding. The odds are that he'll hit something eventually. He doesn't. And that just goes to show, you could be rich, but it doesn't make you a good shot.
No, it doesn't buy you competency with a weapon.
Go to bed thinking about that. Have a good night's sleep. It'll help you make that your little inspirational note. You can write that on the mirror in your bathroom. And when you wake up in the morning, you'll say, huh, you know what? I may not be rich, but I'm a good shot.
I have competency with a weapon.
If you are not.
That's what Ryan said. He's really...
I did kind of fuck up because if you're... not rich and you also aren't a good shot, that could send you into a spiral. Don't do that, everybody. Do not do.
For a very specific audience, you're like, you can rest easy. As long as you have a couple specific things
I'm
in your
life. I'm assuming that our audience is exactly that group.
Yeah, that's right. We were, yes. All right, so we then move to Victor's apartment and we hear one of his recordings. Recordings that he will do throughout the whole movie.
He's an artiste.
I am the wind of salvation. I blow gently across the desert, mother, caress her flowers. I am her life. But to you, I will be the wind of death. Do you feel something on the back of your neck? No. Look around very slowly. Do you feel it? All your money will not protect you. All your friends will turn on you and then run. You will be alone before the wind. All the land you have stolen and raped will only give you up. It will not hide you. It will give you up to the wind.
I know we're not at final questions, but aren't you supposed to, if you record a tape, disguise your voice? I mean, you have the opportunity because you recorded it on tape that you could disguise your voice, right? Instead, he just...
Can you recognize the wind, Mark?
I'm just saying, you could have been like, you are the wind.
I doubt it. And the wind. Do you recognize? Oh, I felt that wind before. I don't think so. That's not how wind works.
Listening to the tape, and I'm like, is that just Mark with his hand over his mouth? I don't... It sounds
this
like
is
just...
a totally different voice.
Mark covering his mouth.
You can't recognize this.
I'm not going to be able to make the podcast tonight. Yeah. So,
hey, Mark, you good? It sounds like you're just covering your mouth, dog.
Why'd you put your hand in front of your mouth? Just making it harder to understand, obviously, your voice. In his apartment, we see around that Victor has newspaper clippings and he's got building schematics and posters of both JFK and Lee Harvey Oswald. You know, a fan of both.
True fan.
Big fan of JFK? Oh, yes. But also, you know what? I really have a soft spot for Lee Ozzy, too. You know what I mean? Like, he had some good points as well. You know, just into them both.
Yeah. Ryan.
Did you call him Lee Ozzy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that what you call him? Is it because you're a fan? Do you have that on your wall?
I mean, I guess if you have a poster of him up in your house, but also a poster of JFK, just so you can, I don't know. The rich guys in town, and there are a good many of them, they want to bring in someone from outside the law, and that's how Oliver Reed enters the film. Though, oddly, he's picked up at the airport by one of the police detectives, so... And then eventually... driven around town by the police chief. So I'm like, you are involving the cops.
Yeah.
You're just, you don't have faith in the cops. So you brought in an outsider who's not a cop. And the police, the local police are going, yeah, let that guy clean up.
Well, I mean, you're forgetting, Ryan, that one of the things that the police do is they give local tours to people that fly into town. It's a way to make money for the police union and give it, you know, it's a little charitable thing they do where it's like, you know, you can call the police department in any city you land in and say, I'd like a tour.
One of your finest detectives, please, to show me around.
Yeah. It's a shame that Airbnb hasn't picked this up and made it part of, like,
their whole package. Like one of your finest detectives in dressed in his craziest shirt, please.
So he then lays out, that is to say, Oliver Reed, he lays out to William Whittaker how his terms of how he's going to help them out.
I don't want any of those people to talk to anybody, not even family or friends. I want you to adhere to the terrorist's every demand. I mean, no matter how crazy it may seem, even the ransom, you understand? That's no problem. We've got the money. Well, that's good. Incidentally, there are two ways in which I work. First one is my way. And the second one's my way.
Two things, and the reason why I wanted that clip. Oliver Reed is so good in this movie.
Oh, dude, I was going to say, look, I get it. He's a male chauvinist and all that stuff. I get it.
Yeah, no, he's, yeah.
But he is fucking captivating in this movie.
I don't know. I think the jacket does a lot of the heavy lifting, if I'm being honest.
You're not wrong.
But I couldn't help, 15 minutes into this movie, when his character is introduced, when he first goes to Whitaker's and has the conversation, I was like, this movie doesn't deserve a guy this good.
Oh. Yes. Yeah. He's very, very good. In a role that's not great. And yes, he's not cool with the ladies. Yeah. He throws around a lot of epithets.
I totally get that.
Not a good dude.
But, he
but
is,
boy, he's really good in this movie.
So good.
And doing a pretty good American accent.
Is it enough? I know we're on final questions, but is that enough? Not cool with the ladies, not a chill guy, but like, hey, good actor.
The way he's written is not particularly terrific.
And this is a movie of a different time, so I'll give it a little bit of a pass there. It is uncomfortable at times, for sure. But
for sure,
this movie doesn't deserve an actor this good playing this role.
He's so good. Second of all,
but again, is it him or is it the jacket? I feel like you guys are charmed by the jacket.
Yeah. It's a jacket and him combo. It has to be. It's, you know.
Yeah.
I just wonder if I get that kind of attention if I had that jacket on. I don't know.
Is it the peanut butter? Is it the chocolate? Is it the combo of the two? It's the combo of the two. Yeah. You know? I mean, you like both individually, but together, they're incredible.
Point, counterpoint.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Are we going? We're going on a roll of Reese's, Reese's deep dive here.
Saying, point, counterpoint. He has multiple scenes out in the Arizona desert, which I don't know if that's the peanut butter or the chocolate. I'm going to say it's the peanut butter. The hot-ass fucking Arizona desert. And he's the chocolate in that jacket. Mm-hmm. Cool as a cucumber. Doesn't look hot. Doesn't look sweaty. He's not getting red in the face. I'm like, you know he's roasting in that jacket.
Roasting but in that jacket. But he's like, so hot.
Totally cool.
Yeah, somehow. Also, the other point to point out, he is very clear about his rules, and they're like, no worries, we'll absolutely do whatever the guy says. And the minute they actually have to do whatever the guy says, they absolutely do not. So he's like, just you know, for reference, Whitaker's like, yeah, oh, we'll totally help you out, no problem, we're paying you, we're going to do whatever, and he will do none of it. But speaking of uncomfortable things that Oliver Reed's character does, he leaves the house and he goes and comes across local news reporter Cindy Simmons, played by Deborah Raffin. He takes her microphone as soon as she starts to interview him, and he then drives off with it to a local bar where she then meets him and he hits on her in one of the strangest pickup lines that starts once he pulls a gun on her.
Loaded. Yes, it is. And if you make one move, I'm gonna blow your pretty little head off.
moving.
Good girl. Good girl. You'll never point a weapon. Unless you mean it.
Also, let me take. She takes getting that gun pointed at her really well.
Because he calls her pretty. You know how fucking long it's been since she's been complimented? To me, this scene, yeah. Very sad. Very tragic. Clearly, no one has said, hey, you're actually super pretty. You're beautiful, in fact. No one has said that to her. And this is what it took. She had to be told at gunpoint to believe it. Sad, Ryan. It's a tragedy.
Also, if you're a bass player and you're told that and you're working on a soundtrack,
okay,
and somebody says people are about to have sex, you just gotta do the boop. That you just do the boop.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sound of like fucking's about to happen. Boop. Whoop.
What's happening in this scene? Got it.
So you gotta
have
do
to when hire they have a sex, right? The... You have to be clear to hire a bass player. You have to be. Shit. You have to hire.
Should I get my bass from the other room?
You have to hire a bass player who's actually has sex.
That's true.
Otherwise, he goes the wrong way. He's like, boo-ee! He goes the wrong way. He plays it wrong.
What's funny is that the two people in the opening scene, both bass players. That's what's funny, actually. So they did, but they did not work on the soundtrack in this movie. Not at all.
Nope.
Oh,
not at all.
Okay.
Another victim is found. Nick goes to the police station where he is paired with Jim Mitchum finally at last. Jim Mitchum is a tracker, which is why they're being paired together. Or at least that's what he's called. He's called Tracker. That's his name. That's what they call him. Mm-hmm. So they're like, I guess he's pretty good at tracking. You know what he doesn't do in this movie? Track.
No, he's really bad at it.
He doesn't track anything. Does tracks? Yeah. Tracks nothing.
Yeah. But you know, in every job, there are people that are good at their jobs and people that are bad at their jobs. You know, you can be a web developer and you can be a really bad one. Doesn't make you not a web developer. You're just not a good one.
Sure, sure.
I felt like he was a Nepo baby.
Jim Mitchum? I doubt it. That doesn't sound right.
Paul McCartney would be pissed at you for saying that.
Nepo baby does not track.
Got him. Got him.
Yeah. Okay, so while it's nice that Nick gets a buddy here, right?
He has a friend.
He doesn't do much tracking, especially since the killer sets up the drop point for the money, which starts up in the mountains, but that ends in a dirt bike chase where they actually ride around the Roosevelt Dam in Scottsdale, Arizona
I love that chase.
Yeah, it's awesome. So fun. Needed it in the middle, and I'm so glad it was there.
Yes.
The money drop actually turns out to be fake money. As I pointed out, he gave them pretty specific instructions that they failed to follow, which prompts Nick to quit. And what is a series of quitting? what is the opposite of quiet quitting? Mm-hmm. It's when you keep quitting all of the time.
It is Nick.
But then you never quit.
It's constant quitting.
Yeah, constant quitting.
Constant quitting. But he doesn't quit. He quits twice in a day after Whitaker is attacked in his own home, but he's not killed. And then Nick sees that his friend Wolf is dead, and he's like,
then you get yourself another boy.
And then minutes after that, Whitaker's like, lies to the governor, is like, we got the killer. He's dead, and he's not dead. He's absolutely not been killed or harmed in any way. And he's like,
well, that is it. I want out.
And you know what? He's not out. He's still very much in.
That's because his return flight is not for 4 more days. And he's like, well, fuck, what am I going to do with my time?
Yeah.
So I guess I might as well keep working on this.
Yeah. They're like, you can change the time of your flight for $50. And they're like, in 1977 money? No, thank you.
No way.
Screw that. I'll just hang out in this shitty town for a couple more days. Anyway, that lie is instantly undone. I'm talking about the lie about them getting the killer. Because at the Bicentennial Parade, that's when Victor kills off the mayor. So, we're not at Final Questions, but why even lie about it? It was found out like an hour after you lied to the governor. It was like, oops. Oh, actually, no. When I said we got him, we didn't. As it turns out. And now the mayor's dead.
And real, so, my bad on JFK that one. Style. So, going back to his wall, you know.
Yeah, going back to his wall. Yeah. He's getting his inspiration. This, of course, leads to another chase on dirt bikes, or at least Victor on a dirt bike. Even ace reporter Cindy Simmons, she gets involved jumping into the back of a convertible from the parade with two people who are not at all aware of the seriousness of the situation they happen to be in.
She's pretty little thing, isn't she, honey? A little skinny, but she's a pretty little thing.
Will you shut up?
What tribe is that?
I'm gonna get a shot out of here somewhere along
what the way. What tribe is that guy from, honey?
Damn mouth,
what tribe are you from?
What?
So much fun in my life.
I'm gonna bust his ass.
They are black.
Oh, yes.
Honey, you think that Indian's got any turquoise?
Is that my favorite scene? Maybe. Oh. Maybe. And when I say maybe, I mean yes. This is where the movie turned totally Smokey and the Bandit. And that couple is Buford T. Justice and Junior arguing during a police chase. She gets mad at him, like, why hasn't he quit smoking? I mean, they're driving all over the desert chasing this guy, and they're arguing the entire time. And I was like, this is phenomenal. Like, this is incredible.
It's purely coincidental, but this I felt like a scene straight from Cannonball.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or Cannonball Run. Either way.
either way. Yeah. I mean, are they the only people in town who are unaware that someone is killing people? They seem to be blissfully unaware.
Mm-hmm.
Also, to your point, if they are indeed rich, which I am assuming they are, but they could not be, he is terrible. He cannot shoot this guy on the motorbike. It's not as if Paul Coslow's weaving around on that road. He's driving in a straight line. Mm-hmm. So you can line up that gun and shoot him. But
I mean, odds are you'll hit something, the bike, something. You're going to hit something that interrupts the chase.
Aim near it. Yeah, even if it hits the road right by him, it could get something in his eye. Something could happen.
It's time for things we love. Wind and things we hated.
Yes, we're going to talk about the things we love and the things we hated about Maniac, aka Assault Wind on Paradise. Strong. Mark, what did you love?
This movie is full of things that it doesn't deserve. When we already covered Oliver Reed, his acting in this movie, his presence is this. This movie doesn't deserve a guy that good.
Sure.
It also has a succession of helicopter shots of the Arizona desert that are really well shot, and this movie does not deserve that. Like nice of cinematography. I mean, I'm talking low flying over cliff sides coming over the top and down from a helicopter, and it looks beautiful. And I'm like, there is an above average there. It's a stretch goal. This movie, they are stretching what New World Pictures normally puts out. They were aiming for something much bigger. And now I read, and maybe we'll get into your research, that New World cut a bunch of this, like they cut down the movie quite a bit. And I feel like I haven't seen, maybe the TV version had some of that. I've only seen, because I have the DVD, so that's the one I watched. Like this movie was aiming higher than I think where it ultimately landed by the caliber of the actors and the cinematography. There was a lot that it was trying to achieve, and it kind of just ends up like a police action drama movie that's pretty formulaic, and you're like, man, mm-hmm. for everything you had going in, this could have been like really great. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it could have been really great.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, shouts to Charles Correll, who is the cinematographer. He also did the cinematography for Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and National Lampoon's Animal House, amongst other films. And then settled into TV, much like the director Richard Compton. But yeah, he does a great job of shooting this movie. But it does feel at certain points like it starts to feel a little like a TV movie. I mean, this yeah. movie is rated PG, which is a little unusual even to think about. But
this is a movie that should have been R.
It should have been.
It would have benefited from that.
Yeah, being a little bit more intense, for sure. But, you know, I agree. I mean, I kind of really dug this movie.
Yeah, I kind of did,
not,
too.
It's not a bad movie. Like, I
look, I get there's a lot wrong with it, and especially in today's
for
lens.
For sure, for sure.
It's like, oh, boy, there's a lot that's
problematic. There's a lot of things that did not totally date well, and for the
you
time, and really, for now.
We're really won over by that jacket. I just think 100%,
100%.
Yes.
Wow.
Ultimately,
you just don't see jackets like that in movies things anymore.
Scratch everything I said about the thing I loved. The thing I loved was a jacket. That's true.
Yeah. I heard you loud and clear.
Like full stop.
Agree.
I'm done.
Agree. Mm-hmm. But Erica, what did you love?
Oh, hey guys, good to have you back. You're really getting lost in the sauce of things you love there. So.
The Newman's Own sauce.
Oh, boy. Don't put it under your arms. Won't work. Not the same. Doesn't
mix
with your
pH. You'll smell good when you leave the house. You'll be like, oh, my God, you smell delicious.
Yeah.
You will smell like fresh marinara, but you won't.
Mm-hmm. But you will also smell like marinara inside of a locker room after a game.
Yep. Yeah. And we'll get rid of that BO smell. No. That's the thing.
It will not. It will not.
Yeah.
Things I loved were the cold open. We talked about that. I loved it. I thought it was great. I wish more or, frankly, any New World movies had cold opens that would just lock me in from the beginning. We love the jacket. I get it. Mm-hmm. But I also loved the music that just in between scenes, things were happening that like, burn out, burn out. Bono, 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 bono. I love that. I thought it was terrific, and it should be the scene-setting music for all movies. It was great.
It is good. It is good music by Don Ellis, who does the music for the movie. Let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what'd you hate?
This movie does one of those things that I really hate and a lot of movies do, which is when someone jumps from a high cliff into a big body of water, they just look down and go, well, I guess he's dead. Let's all go home. Look, just stay looking down. Keep looking down. Don't stop looking down, because if the person's alive, they're going to pop up, say, 20 feet from wherever they landed and keep swimming. Mm-hmm. And then you can shoot at them or whatever you want to do. But if they're dead, their body may sink, but it also might float. It kind of depends on, you know, is it salt water versus fresh water? How overweight they are, because fat will float more than muscle will.
Is this also a crunch?
Also,
that's why I sink straight to the bottom like a stone.
Weird.
Also,
pure muscle.
If you have a giant backpack that would act as a life preserver,
which I always do,
you're going
to
always float.
Oh, damn. Okay. Well, never mind.
You're going to back up to the top.
You're
in which
float
case,
there,
you'd
right.
be like, there he is. I guess he's dead because he's not swimming. Yeah. Like
I have a backpack filled with all my protein shakes.
And then I just run in. I'm like, shoot him anyway. Come on. We know the rules here.
But.
Gun.
He jumps in the water, Victor, and they immediately turn away. And they're like, well, what do we do now? I'm like, keep looking down at the water. Look down at
the water.
I really
thought you were starting to talk about the dam guard that was there who fell first on the other side.
Oh.
Which was a much bigger fall, because then you had things I love about movies, which is the dummy death. I will never not love a dummy death. It's the best. It's the best.
He does love it.
Something
you
hated, but you also loved?
No, not at all. No, this is something I love. I'm just sneaking in someone else.
Mm.
No, that dummy fall was something else. They cut it in half to try to make it not look like a dummy death, but right. You can tell that falling from that fall, that far height, and even into the water, you're like, dummy death.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't get enough of that. Yeah. But anyway, you were saying.
If anything ever happened to me, you're going to have to just throw a dummy in front of Ryan so that he can smile again. And then he'll be like, it's fine. This is what we would have wanted.
To make matters worse with this movie, Tracker and Oliver Reed's character, whose name I'm forgetting right now.
Nick.
Go back.
Really complicated name of Nick.
Yeah, I have Nick blindness.
Way to hard crunch to remember. Our hard bodies remember. Float or sink, but not remember Nick.
Yeah,
it's a
name I can never remember.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
They go back to the reservoir to ponder how did he make it? Well, maybe if you fucking kept looking down at the reservoir, you would have seen how he made it. But they immediately packed up everything. Here's the thing. You had someone jump in a reservoir. Nobody sent an ambulance. They didn't call. They were like, wrap it up, everybody. We're going home.
What? Mm-hmm. They did not check the water. They did not trawl the river or whatever.
Nothing. They didn't get out boats to be like, they didn't get a scuba team to go looking. No. They're just like, that's it. Well, fuck it. Let's go home.
Done. They're dead. Have to be.
And we're just going to let this rotting corpse hang out in the city's drinking water. No big deal.
Is that why it tasted so good that month?
It tasted like marinara.
Delicious. He's a Mitchum man. I can taste it.
This shower is delicious.
Oh, my God. Ooh. You guys tasting that? Woo.
Are you going to save some hot water for the rest of us? No. No, I am not. Water is amazing. Erica, what's something you hated? Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Tough stuff.
I think...
Victim of the jacket.
Yeah, the jacket had us all swooned, that's for sure. I think what I hated was... I mean, I'm struggling. It's totally different if we're recasting it. So I guess that's not a fair hated it. But I think I hated that Nick ended up with the girl. I didn't want him to win there.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think tragedy suits the character of Nick better.
Yes.
So I didn't want him to win on that. I wanted him to sort of not win and not have a success there, not have a W with the ladies, but that's nitpicky. I think this is a fun film. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. To Mark's point, see a lot of the Arizona desertscape. There's some wild shots in there that I kept saying to Ryan, like, is this from a helicopter? And Ryan, all of his infinite wisdom, was like, yeah, probably. Which was enough for me. I was sold. I'm like, my goodness, this helicopter footage. It throws a lot in there. I feel like it throws a lot at you in 89 minutes. And I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
I liked it. Yeah, there isn't much that I hated. Not much that I hated.
I agree. I didn't love the romance part of it. I'm not sure we needed romance, it. Now in
you don't need it. Yeah, it just felt like fluff.
In the longer TV cut, there's a bit more back and forth between, you know, Deborah Raffin and Oliver Reed. And she sort of kind of uses him for information at one point and for her story. There's a scene where he gets kind of mad and he does shoot his gun and actually hits the light of their car, like news van or whatnot. So like there is a bit more back and forth. Again, more reasons though, ultimately for her to also like go nowhere near him. And then for them to end up together, it feels like, were we supposed to root for them? Like it's in the version that New World released, it's so much slighter. And not to say that it's much longer and more involved in the TV cut. It's not. But there is more of it and more of a back and forth than there seems to be in this edited cut. But it still felt like it doesn't sink the movie for me, but it's just a moment where I'm like, I don't know if I was like, will the two of them end up together? Like that mm-hmm. twist at the end, yeah. I wasn't like, they're together. Yeah. Like, I'm like, I wasn't worried.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, I don't think I needed mm-hmm. that as a payoff.
It's not safety goggles, so how weird could it be, right, Ryan?
That's right. Which I need at all times. Hardly even a kink at this point. Well, let's switch to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
Well, I already said what my favorite scene was, which is the chase scene where it suddenly becomes Smoking the Bandit. And you have like car crashes galore. You have grenades. You have the arguing couple. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous and over the top. They crash so many cars. They blow up so many cars. It's crazy. Since I've already talked about that a little bit, I want to also say there is a thing in this movie that I loved and hated. Mm. And that is Victor, the enemy or the bad guy in this movie.
Is he?
Okay, good guy, he's your anti-hero, I guess, or your whatever. Mm. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. When he's killing people, he's in full indigenous garb.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's going to play a tape to Whitaker on a payphone, he's just in a blazer. Kind of feels like it should be the other way around. Like, if you're in indigenous garb, that people are going to see you and be like, yeah, we saw this guy. He was in a full Native American outfit and had war paint on his face. You're kind of stand out at this. Say, the country club, when he goes and shoots a bunch of tennis players with his crossbow, versus, wouldn't you wear that when you're just going to the payphone and you're doing something innocuous? It feels like, I've never shot and killed anybody, but I would kind of choose the mundane for those moments and save the pizzazz for the everyday, which is how I live every day, everyone. If you run into me on the streets, mm-hmm. I am dressed
full of pizzazz. Just full so of much pizzazz.
I look at myself in the mirror and I say, am I pizzazzed enough to go out? Oh my God.
Have I pizzazzed it out or what? Am I even pizzazzing today?
That's what I have written on my mirror in my bathroom. Mm-hmm. Am I pizzazzed?
Go full
today?
Pizzazz. Erica, your favorite scene.
I love that cold open. Might it be my favorite scene? Mm. It might. I know it's not really fair because it's not relevant to the rest of the film. I think if I can't select that because of the rules of the New World Pictures podcast, the bylaws, I haven't read it and I won't. You'll never contain me. I'm crazy. Then my second favorite scene is Tennis Court Massacre, because that man is in a robe. One of the mm-hmm. guy who gets the wire or whatever around the neck mm-hmm. in the a bolo. Robe. He's yeah. in a mm-hmm. robe, 100%. And I just think, you know what? If you go out in your robe, then you've done it.
Yeah,
that is success.
Yeah, agreed.
I know we're not at final questions, but if you get a bola around the neck like you did, we're very close.
So close.
If you get a bola around the neck, that would suck, right? Yeah. But would it kill you?
What's it called? A bola? Mm-hmm. Ebola? Around the neck? No. You're dying. You're dying from that.
Ebola. It's called Ebola.
Oh.
Or just bola.
Okay. Maybe the shock of it might take me out. I'm not sure. Are we speaking about ourselves explicitly? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm done. Because I'm unexpecting it. It probably causes me to fall and hit my head. I'm out. Yep. Takes me out for sure.
Okay.
I was always known. I've been known my whole life for having a very strong neck. So,
yeah. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Well, Mark and that thick neck. Good luck cracking that thing.
I mean, the rest of my body is completely out of shape. But people are like, fuck, man. Your neck is tight. Right. So, I think I'd be okay.
Yeah.
Brittle bones except for the neck.
The rest of your body is a soft target, but they went for the one hard spot.
I'd be like, oh, you chose the wrong spot on me, bro.
Dumb. I'm about to take you out. That's stupid. That's on you.
Mm-hmm.
quickly before we actually do get to final questions, my favorite scene was when Whitaker is attacked in his own home.
Oh, yeah.
And he, because he hadn't given up the money. And it's actually really tense. And he's like looking at like the, you know, security cameras and he sees like the shadows. And then like there's that scene where like Victor kind of sneaks down the hallway. And then you can kind of see a TV in the corner and you see Whitaker like rounding the bend. And then he walks into frame, which is kind of a cool shot. And then he walks down the hallway and you just have that light at the end of the hallway. Yeah. I was like, we got some cool stuff. Like we haven't seen all of the movies that Richard Compton has directed, but I was like, this definitely, and we've touched on this already, but it's definitely probably the most stylish movie he's directed. I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say it, that this isn't the most stylish movie in general, but for Richard Compton it's a pretty stylish movie, and I really dug that scene. It's very effective.
Yeah,
but let's get into our final questions, and I've already asked one, but let's get into another one.
Okay,
what happened to Carson, the one-eyed butler?
Great question.
Did he have the night off?
Yeah, I think he had the, yeah.
He had, yeah.
Yeah.
This does take place over a very compressed amount of time. Yeah. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And Carson was very good about requesting PTO in advance. So
he was like, Sundays are my days. Yeah, sorry, I'm me. Off. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, Sundays are C days for Carson.
Would all of this scenario, this whole movie, would this have been avoided if Victor had just made the Olympic swim team?
Yes, 1,000%. Yes. This is what happens when you're forced into sports and you don't make it and you're not the top.
Yeah, this is really a lesson for all you coaches. Sports are both mental and physical. And if we ignore one and, you know, exploit the other, you could end up with someone with a crossbow in their hands.
At the ending song that actually plays over the trailer, so we heard it earlier because that's pretty much the trailer, which is Victor's theme, Shoot Him. Written by executive producer Patrick Farrell and a man he knew personally, so he got him to do the song, Roger McGuinn from the Byrds. That's no they shit. Wrote and then performed the song. Is that a worldy nominee?
100%, yeah. Without question. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I thought so. Yeah.
It's already the winner in my eyes. So.
Well, you never know. The worldy committee. You never know what's going to happen. Let's do some quick research. I'm not sure what the exact budget is of this movie, but according to executive producer Patrick Farrell, the budget was around $1.5 million with $750,000 coming from local Arizona investors. On the commentary, producer Peter McGregor Scott said that the film cost about $750,000. So either he's confused or the 1.5 figure is made up, which would be in line with a lot of New World movies when Roger Corman would always inflate the money that they were spending, but they would never spend as much as he said. Either way, a big chunk of that money, whatever they did spend, went to Oliver Reed. That's how they got him, because he got more money than anyone else. Farrell had raised the money via venture capital. And he explained to the Arizona Republic in May 1977 that he felt the process was rather foolproof. He said, quote, if you make a movie for about $1.5 million, it has to make $3 million in business for you to get even. With modern marketing, advertising applied at saturation, it's almost impossible not to make $3 million, even if the picture's a dog. You make that much even before word of mouth gets around, but I'm not advocating fooling the public. Did that work, though? It's hard to say, but Farrell and his Sunset Productions had made one movie prior to this. It's called 1973's Summer Rain. And then after this movie, they didn't make another movie. So,
but from what you just explained, there's a giant flaw in that. He said,
sure,
$1.5 million. If it makes $3 million, you break even. The point is to make money.
To make money, sure.
Yeah. So if you made two movies that just broke even, why would you continue?
Right. If you are just making movies to break even, then
why?
I guess you don't lose money, but you aren't...
But you didn't make money, so go do something else.
I'm just not sure this movie made money, which we will get to in a second. Filming took place late October to November 1976 in Scottsdale in Phoenix, Arizona. Of course, wherever Reed went, stories would follow him, as a Miss Manners article pointed out in November 1976. It said that Reed is up to his usual antics, keeping the local bars active. There's talk about someone throwing a karate chop in Reed's direction and winding up with a broken hand. The assailant, not the actor. Somebody else went pub crawling with Reed one night, slipped, and wound up with a broken leg. So, who knows? It's either in the same incident or another one altogether. Another article, Reed claimed that someone tried to strangle him with a rope in a Scottsdale, Arizona bar. Well, I don't know if it's the same scenario. And yet another incident reported by the San Francisco Examiner said that Reed and Jim Mitchum have been pushing each other and others into a pool. That's one of the things they did. And then at 3 a.m. the other night, Reed woke up his co-star, Deborah Raffin, who was in bed with her husband, Michael Viner, with a phone call. And he said, "I'm in love with your wife and I'm coming over," he notified Viner. Arriving, he started taking off his clothes when half naked, he announced it was a prank. "Fine prank," said the Viners. Another Miss Manners article from December 1976 reported that Reed hurt himself when he took a fall while carrying a bayonet on his shoulder on set, and it pierced his side, but he was only out a few days.
Wow.
I would imagine the jacket took some of that brunt.
Yeah.
That said, in that same article from Miss Manners, Deborah Raffin spoke to Miss Manners and had a few words for Dorothy about her co-star. She said, "You were wrong in tipping me that it would be difficult working with Oliver Reed. We've had a marvelous time on this picture. In fact, producer Jim Hart and director Richard Compton are so pleased with us in this picture. They have a new story titled Frat Rat, a comedy set in the 50s they want Oliver and me to team in."
Hmm. Team in, another version of steamin. But it's like
team in,
but where vaginas and dongers are teaming. They're teaming up. Not porn. Not porn, everybody.
Not porn.
It's just teaming.
Great. I'm in.
It's the third sequel. Teaming.
That producer, James Hart, who wanted to make that movie, by the way, is a writer-producer of movies like Hook and Bram Stoker's Dracula and Muppet Treasure Island and a bunch of stuff.
And in 2028, teaming.
Yeah, coming soon, but a few years out. I think the plan, though, for this movie pretty early on was for New World Pictures to release it, because it was reported by the Arizona Republic in November of 1976 when they were shooting the movie that they were going to release it. And so they did. At the end of April, early May of 1977, New World released the movie under the title Assault in Paradise. Sometimes it was shown with next week's film, Crazy Mama.
Mm.
But it didn't have much success, so they would retitle the movie, and literally they did this like a week later. They retitled the movie The Town That Cried Terror. So like in May 1977, they release it. They're like, "We didn't get good results." They retitle it, release it right away again in like Virginia, Maryland. And it's often paired as a second feature with Black Oak Conspiracy, another New World movie that we have talked about. Then a week later from that, it was the main feature paired with Crazy Mama or New World's Great Texas Dynamite Chase.
Okay.
But that didn't seem to take. So by the fall, they call it Maniac, a killer, paired with Eaten Alive or God Told Me To for a real Deborah Raffin double, which at that point was being called Demon.
Hmm.
And then they retitle it yet again for any other releases that happen after that, often in TV. In fact, the TV cut that's on the Blu-ray, it's called Ransom or The Ransom. So it has, and of course, around the time it's released, writer Ronald Silkowski told the LA Times in 1978 that the movie had been heavily trimmed. He trimmed a ton of it out. About a third of the entire movie is cut out. For it to make to the magical time that Roger Corman always liked, which is just under 90 minutes. So that way he could cut out an entire reel.
Yeah.
But watching the much longer, I think it's like 104 minutes, the TV cut, there's not a ton to report. There is extra stuff, and I did notice like extra things, but I feel like a lot of it is also just like how tightly they trimmed things down. But so there isn't like tons of new stuff that I can report that are in there. And again, I didn't hate the TV cut. I kind of enjoyed this movie. This is just a bit of a surprise, but I did not hate this one. This is,
yeah,
got a lot of dated stuff in it, but it was still enjoyable.
Again, and we've caveated, so I don't need to caveat again. But very quickly on, they introduce Oliver Reed's character, Nick. Right? And the first
the name just won't stick with you, will it?
Just I don't understand that name. The first scene he's in, I think, which is at Whitaker's house.
He comes out of the airport. Comes out of the airport.
Right, but the first like long dialogue where he's interacting with people is at Whitaker's place. Mm-hmm. I was like, I mean, he is so good in this movie, and I'm repeating myself again, but it just, it could have, this movie is overshooting what it's trying to do by having someone that good playing this character.
And that said, the biggest change from the TV cut to the one that New World released, and the TV cut, of course, does not have the opening scene, but the biggest change is that it is loaded with voiceover from Oliver Reed.
Really?
So Oliver Reed's character often that he has got voiceover where he's like discussing what's happening. So a lot of the scenes, like when you see all the rich guys like in Whitaker's house, so he starts giving details about who they are and that he's talked about all these, brought all the rich guys in town over to his place. He talks about the fact that he's getting $50,000 to do this whole gig. There's tons of voiceover, which really is not needed. I don't know if that was how it always was originally supposed to be. They cut it out when Roger Corman had it, or they just hadn't recorded it. I don't know. But that was the big difference. There's tons of voiceover at the tail end where he talks about, yep, I got the girl. That kind of, there's tons of voiceover, which I honestly think is the only... That does not work. I think that they did better not having the voiceover in the New World cut. But that's it. That is Assault on Paradise, a.k.a. Maniac. But the start of March Madness 2, Let's Get Nuts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to listen to all the episodes that we're going to do this month and March Madness Part 1, you can go to our website. NewWorldPicturesPodcast.com. That's where we have all of our articles and episodes and t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt. It helps support the show. Or write us a 5-star review if you dare. I dare you to. And we will see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description.
Do you love movies? So do I. What's up, y'all? It's KB, and I love movies. Inviting you to listen to The Conversation, a film podcast where passion meets perspective and opinion. From the old school to the new, I invite a guest on to discuss the movies that thrill us, challenge us, break our hearts, or even blow our minds. There's always new episodes dropping wherever you get your podcasts. So join the conversation. we don't just watch movies. We love talking about them too. The Conversation with KB Loves Movies, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.